The Cannabis Heals Me Podcast, episode 106.
You're listening to the Cannabis Heals Me Podcast, where we explore the real stories of real people who have discovered the profound healing properties of the cannabis plant in their own lives. Find more at cannabishealsme.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Cannabis Heals Me Podcast. This is your host, Rachel Kennerly, and I'm broadcasting, actually I'm recording, once again from the Storybook Inn Studios. Thank you guys so much for coming in and joining me this Monday. It's been a little weird trying to get back in the groove. It's just, things are weird. Very blessed that both my job and my husband's job is still considered essential, but I've got several friends and clients who their businesses have been categorized as unessential, which makes it very difficult for them to pay the bills because the bills are still rolling in. They just don't have the income there to cover it. So be in thought for the folks out there who are not able to work as a result of this, and be in thought for those whose health is affected by the coronavirus and any other ailment that might be going around out there. And no, I have no idea if cannabis heals coronavirus. No one wants to tell their story yet about using cannabis while they had coronavirus. You will be the first one to know if I happen to get somebody who wants to do that, though. But our guest today is Bridget Danderall-Sarrett. She's going to come on and talk to us about her use of cannabis for several different autoimmune disorders, and her story is pretty remarkable. So without further delay, let's welcome Bridget to the program. I am joined today by Bridget Danderall-Sarrett. Bridget, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you so much.
Oh, it's my pleasure. My pleasure. I got in contact with you via Facebook. Our friend, oh gosh, I'm totally blanking.
That's okay. Marty introduced
Marty,
us.
Marty, yes. Marty, I'm so sorry, Marty. I'll say my penance for forgetting your name. So Marty connected with several people. So I am grateful to her for putting me in contact with those folks. And Bridget, you're one of the ones she said I had to talk to.
Oh, nice. Nice. Definitely.
So I just want to kind of open the floor to you and let you tell us your story of medical cannabis.
Oh, excellent. Well, I moved to Colorado in 2013, and believe it or not, we did not move for cannabis. We moved for the weather.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes. We are from Atlanta, Georgia, originally, and the weather there is so
too
humid.
Hot.
And so hot. Yes. And I have multiple autoimmune diseases. I have rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, Sjogren's, Ehlers-Danlos, which is a genetic collagen disorder. And that's just the short list.
Wow.
So, absolutely. So when I moved out here, I was actually on a full pharmaceutical regimen for the rheumatoid arthritis, which is severe, by the way. This is end stage that we're talking about and has been for at least 15 years that I'm aware of. I do have organ involvement.
Oh my goodness. From all the medications that you were on, or just as a side effect of your ailments?
It's a little bit of both. And so we came out here and I was on oxycodone and Opana, and I react to most opiates. So one day I couldn't fill them, and then that became a thing. I ended up having to drive 60 miles just to get half of a prescription one time. And that was it. It was becoming too difficult to try to fill them with the war on opiates. And you could kind of see what was happening with that. So I said, you know what? They just legalized cannabis. I'm going to try it. And the rest is history. Now I'm up. I'm moving around. My RA and my autoimmune diseases are actually very well controlled. And I have failed all pharmaceuticals at this point. So I am pretty much pharmaceutical free and only using cannabis.
That's pretty impressive with the slew of diagnoses you just listed earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, using cannabis, it actually allowed me to get off 9 prescriptions organically. And so that is a cost savings, I think, of over $45,000 a year.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
6,840 pills I didn't have to take. And then my last biologic failed. And so now I don't take that.
Now, the biologics, some of my other folks that have been on, they were taking biologics for... Mm-hmm. I think is it for the rheumatoid arthritis or is it just for all of it?
Rheumatoid arthritis.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Now, one of the things that having rheumatoid arthritis, does the medication that you have to hit, doesn't it suppress your immune system and make you more susceptible to getting sick?
Oh, yeah. And that's just one of many ridiculous side effects. You can actually get different autoimmune diseases. For instance, I have the beginnings of what could be Crohn's, but I think the cannabis has held it off. And that came when I used Enbrel. I never had stomach issues before that. I didn't have Sjogren's before medication. So I started out with primary rheumatoid arthritis and lupus, and now the lupus diagnosis has been taken off. It's been in remission for at least 5 years with
That's
no
great.
Medication. Outside of the cannabis. And then the RA is now in mild activity. And I don't have to worry about the side effects. I'm not on prednisone anymore. I've lost 60 pounds.
Wow.
I can move. And I'm not going from doctor to doctor to doctor every couple of weeks trying to manage this or do anything. It's been really freeing.
Yeah. So I guess you got involved in the medical program when you were up there, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And are you still a medical, I mean, you're still obviously a medical patient, but how does that work when they introduce adult use in a state like that? Do you still have to get recommendations for being a medical patient, or once they introduce adult use, you can just go get whatever you need wherever?
So that's kind of a conundrum. The big misconception is that adult use opens it up for everybody, and that actually has made our medical program harder to deal with, to where we've lost about 20,000 patients just in the last 2 years since they killed a lot of the medical. We had a great caregiver and patient program, but now it's all industry. They capped the cultivation. And they're making the medical program look more like a recreational program. So I'm actually not using the medical program anymore. And we are back to having to use our neighborhood markets, if you will.
What does that look like as far as cost for patients? Are costs similar now to what they were before adult use came on the market, or are they higher or lower?
The cost, if you were to purchase on the adult use market in those shops, you're paying an exponential tax. But the issue is our medical shops are failing. So our costs have actually risen as centers close. And so it's become very difficult for us to service ourselves in the regulated market, as it were, just because of cost prohibition alone, not to mention that you can't find what you need. Most of the industry now is geared towards recreational use, whether it's a medical dispensary or not. And it's become very difficult to find things like THCA, acid forms of cannabis, CBD, and some of these other products. It's more, you're starting to see centers turn into recreational shops. And then I think eventually they'll move over to recreational framework.
And with the introduction of adult use, was there more regulation introduced as well, which has made it harder for these folks that had medical shops to continue?
I think that's a lot of it. The adult use, it wasn't quite as regulated. It's still heavily regulated and over-regulated. Mm-hmm. But the costs of doing, they learned their lesson with medical. And so the cost of doing business with recreational, the profit margin is much greater. And so the medical shops are finding it very difficult to compete with the neighborhood markets. And to compete with the fact that if you use adult use, you don't have to have any of your sales tracked. And that's a big issue here. We are a big Second Amendment state, and that's, I think, one of the biggest sticking issues.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I've actually got an interview tomorrow with the lady, and we're going to talk about the right to bear arms and how that relates to cannabis use. And a lot of people won't get a medical card, because then if they get a firearm, they have to check that box.
Yep.
That says that they use it, and that puts them in, you're not supposed to do that.
Correct.
As far as the federal government is concerned, that is a concern. So I can understand how that would be an issue with folks who still want to carry arms to protect themselves or for whatever other purpose.
Absolutely.
Okay, let me ask you this. So you moved from Atlanta, Georgia, which is the Bible Belt.
Yeah.
So what was your attitude towards cannabis before you moved to Colorado? and saw their handwriting on the wall for opiates.
So being in Georgia, you know, I did use cannabis and I used it medically because I was on methotrexate and could not process it. So I was using it for nausea and things like that there. But I had no idea the scope of what cannabis actually worked for or the impacts that it was having on patients until I got here, connected with the patient community. And then it was like this big eye-opening moment, like, oh my word, I have to help. Mm-hmm. I have to, you know, we have to make sure people know, because coming from states where you don't have access, you don't get to see
right.
the kids with schizencephaly who are now seizure free, or the kids with epilepsy who don't have to stop playing sports because now their seizures are under control, or the autoimmuners, the kids with Crohn's disease who are functional and in school now because they have access to cannabis. And this is a new lease on life for them. You know, it's three main disease categories that I'm observing here in Colorado, the cancers, the neurological diseases like epilepsy, autism, et cetera, and then autoimmune diseases, which is my disease category, responding amazingly to cannabis. That's a lot of patients.
It is. And those are chronic ailments. So it's not like they're going away.
Exactly. Exactly. I've seen kids, you know, with autism who are taking cannabidiol dominant concoctions with high THC, and they're gaining language. They're actually
wow.
able to talk to their parents or say things where they've never had language before. They've been nonverbal. I mean, it's just the stuff that I'm seeing here is incredible.
Yeah, that would be pretty awesome to be able to observe that right on. I'm in Texas and we're still mm-hmm. trying to get, you know, we're still fighting the same battle that they're fighting in Georgia, and it may actually even be a little worse here
in
Texas. So it's frustrating because you've got so many people who are so sick with ailments that are not going away. Mm-hmm. And a politician and a bureaucrat wants to tell them what they can and can't put in their body to treat their own body. While in, you know, another state 200 miles away, you've got kids with autism gaining language and seeing these huge gains. And,
yep.
and while a kid that's, you know, 200 miles in the wrong direction, as far as the state goes, are suffering.
Correct. And that's inhumane.
And the argument in all the states where cannabis is no longer legal is that, oh, well, you're just trying to get recreational cannabis passed. That's just the next, you know, it's a slippery slope is what they want to try and say. And it's like, well, it's not a slippery slope when you're the parent of a child who mm-hmm. has a chronic ailment. It's not a slippery slope when you're a cancer patient who is chronic, you know, who's chronically ill.
Yeah.
So it's very frustrating to try and get people to change their mind on the subject. What has been your, like, kind of your sphere of influence? What has been their attitude, or have you seen attitudes change towards cannabis when they see you and they knew what you were like before you went to Colorado, and they see you now and how much better you're doing now?
Oh, it's amazing. I actually even have a 2-year remission and the labs back it up. The difference between what I was and where I'm at now. So many people see it, and it's to the point now where I'm very vocal about it. I run one of the larger patient groups in Colorado for cannabis patients. And so I get the privilege of being able to see these miracles on a daily basis and be able to tell people, no, I know this person. This is really happening. And so many minds are changed because of that. Just to give you an example, my rheumatologist here in Colorado, when I first started and I was first using cannabis, his line was, oh, I don't believe that mumbo jumbo.
Well, oh, wow.
3 years later, he sold the CBD topical cream to Mary's Medicinals. So...
You know. Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yes. Slowly but surely.
Yeah. So it's not mumbo jumbo anymore when you see it with your own two eyes.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, and I don't understand why the government lied about a plant for so many years. And they're still lying about it, saying there's no medicinal benefit and that we don't have the studies.
Right.
And so we've all been cheated of,
yes,
you know, education and health. as a result of the government trying to control what people put in their bodies.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, it is nice to see physicians coming around to it, but it's like, gosh, where would we be if we hadn't had prohibition for 80 years?
Can you imagine? They knew about the anti-tumoral benefits mm-hmm. in the 70s.
Wow.
The 70s. How many people?
And that's when they doubled down on the drug wars back in the 70s.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then when the AIDS crisis hit and they realized that they had this investigational drug program and everybody was going to sign up for it. So they just nixed it. Mm-hmm. And drugs are bad. Cannabis is bad.
Yeah, but then there's actually a program that exists where the U.S. government actually mails people medical mm-hmm. cannabis, right?
Yep, that's the one they shut down right as the AIDS epidemic was coming around because they realized that people were going to start signing up for it and they would be on the hook to mail everybody all of this cannabis.
But the one of the main drugs, Marinol, right? That's mm-hmm. a cannabis-based product.
Yep, that's a synthetic THC.
Yeah. You know, why don't they just let them use the real thing? Of course, I guess Big Pharma couldn't get their cut of piece of the puzzle or piece of the pie if we did that.
Correct. And you know, they for some reason they like to pretend that we're too dumb to handle this, but we're not. It grows in our yard for pennies. There's no reason mm-hmm. we should have to pay for a synthetic. There's no reason we should have to really even pay over inflated prices right. For it. So yeah.
Exactly. And now you mentioned when the adult use program came online, they actually restricted the amount of home grow you could do, right?
Correct.
How many plants were you able to grow before adult use was legalized?
So Colorado had a beautiful medical program and you technically could grow whatever you needed.
Oh, so there wasn't a cap.
There was not. There, wow. In the state constitution, I still technically have an affirmative defense to be able to grow what I need in my own home.
Oh, nice.
However, in 2017, the state went through and it put a statutory law in there that says you can't grow more than 12 in a residential area, period, whether it's medical or recreational, and those are the same grow allowances that recreational has. And with cannabis, one of the things that is not really talked about is the fact that we have to rotate strains. You know, each strain of cannabis or each type of cannabis is its own therapy. It does its own thing. There isn't just this one magical cannabis plant for autoimmune disease and you only use that and that's how it works. You have to keep strains up. And sometimes you have to have a strain rotation of up to 14, 15, 16 mm-hmm. different kinds. And you can't do that if you can only grow 12 at a time with only 6 in flowering.
Yeah, that's because not all of them have the same attributes. You kind of have to mix and match yep. to get the best treatment for your body. But politicians don't understand that, but they're the ones that get to make the laws. Have there been any challenges since there's a Colorado constitutional right without a cap, but then now they've introduced a law that does? Have there been any constitutional challenges to that state law?
Not since the law was passed. There okay. were a couple issues before where people had been prosecuted by law enforcement and they did win their grow cases. But since this one law has gone into effect, nobody has actually beaten it yet.
Yeah.
Still hopeful that we'll be able to get some of our cultivation back, but I think it's going to take a very sick person going up and challenging it, and they can't do that unless they're prosecuted. So
right, and hope that they, you know, if they're a very sick person, that they have the wherewithal to withstand being drugged mm-hmm. through the court system.
Oh yeah, because that's not over in a day. That takes 5, 6, 7 years to get done, and thousands and thousands of dollars.
Well, what is the Colorado legislation or legislators? What are they up to this legislative session? Nothing good, I'm sure.
Really nothing at all.
Oh, that's good.
We had a couple bills that we had to watch and a couple that we would have liked them to take on. But it's an election year, so nobody's touching cannabis.
Oh, okay. Yeah. They'll wait till next session to do it.
Exactly. Last year was a really good year. The year before was a really good year. We got some stuff passed with cannabis in schools, and then a couple new conditions added to the Colorado condition list for qualifying conditions. And so it's been a couple good years. And then this year, everybody's just sitting out for right now.
Yeah, I don't want to rock the boat. Let's just keep the status quo. That way it won't affect my election.
Election. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now, you said you guys have lost a lot of patience with the oncoming of adult use. And you also mentioned the taxes, I guess. If you're a patient, do those taxes still apply, or is it just for recreational cannabis?
If you go into a recreational or adult use store, you're paying recreational taxes.
Okay.
Doesn't matter if you're a patient or not. If you go into a medical store, you're paying the medical tax rate, which is significantly lower. And that's just how that works.
Well, you mentioned that you have a cannabis patient organization. What, can you tell us a little bit more about that? That we have folks that are listening that are in Colorado want to learn more about it. They can go check y'all out.
Absolutely. We have a website at keepitlegalcolorado.org. And I am one of the co-founders of Canna Patient Resource Connection. And we put out educational material that's easy to read. We reach out to groups who are looking at creating cannabis legislation, and we let them know about the problems that we've seen and the issues and the pushback. We also let them know that medical use is very different. So if you are pushing a medical program, you need medical dosing available, not recreational dosing. A lot of people think that medical use is much less, but it's actually significantly more. And so we have all sorts of science, education, classes that we do. We work with elected officials and legislators, so that they can understand what a patient's perspective is going into all of this. And again, we're at keepitlegalcolorado.org.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Well, I will put a link to that in the show notes for today's episode. That way folks can go out there and check that out. It looks like you guys have like get-togethers and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just an online presence. Y'all are actually like, you know, in the community and doing educational events.
Yeah, we're actually a real group. It's not just a Facebook group. We have a medical supply cabinet that we have. So if one of our families comes in and they don't have, you know, say feeding tube supplies, we can help spot them. We do service events within our community as well. We cook for the Ronald McDonald House. We've helped cook for the homeless. We have a lot of volunteer opportunities. You know, we'll do talks here. We go, we speak, we'll do classes. We'll sit on panels for local dispensaries. We try to get everybody involved in community service, because if a community is supported, it's a lot healthier. That's a huge need that we have, I think.
Absolutely. Now, I notice on the website that there's actually an interview with you with the local news station, and it's talking about CPS. And
yes.
So I wanted to touch on that with you, because that's always an area of concern for patients who are using cannabis products with their kids, or if they're using for themselves medically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the things that we were hoping to get into the legislature this year. But all 50 states, whether it's CBD, CBD isolate, or regular cannabis, all 50 states have a loophole that can be used by CPS to investigate you for legal cannabis use. And some patients that get arrested, or not arrested, but investigated, mm-hmm. are actually legal patients that either they went to the hospital and the hospital doesn't agree with what they're doing, so they're going to report them. Doctor's offices, schools, generally those things come with mandatory, folks who are under mandatory reporting laws. But cannabis is a sticking area, and it's on the Controlled Substances Act in all 50 states still. And so because of that, it's still an issue with CPS, regardless of what laws are on the books.
Yeah, that's a real shame, because you probably think, or a lot of parents probably think, well, it's legal in my state, so I shouldn't have any problems with CPS.
Well, even look at the hemp CBD,
yes.
you know, where you had the federal deschedule, but it was placed under FDA regulatory authority and they classified it as a drug product.
Mm-hmm.
Most people see that the blogs and things like that that are like, oh, hemp CBD, it's legal. And they don't understand that it's still in a state by state basis.
Yes.
That many states still have it on the Controlled Substances Act. And they think it's legal to give to their children. And they'll get a call from CPS going, so we hear you're giving CBD to your child. So there's a lot. The laws are very ambiguously written. I don't know how any patient could comply with what's out there and what's written. It just, there's so much of it. It doesn't make sense.
Oh, absolutely. You just kind of got to mind your P's and Q's as best you can and say as little as you can to whoever's asking questions.
Right? Yep.
You don't want to self-incriminate on accident there.
Exactly. And a lot of people do because they're just not aware of what the laws are. And legal doesn't necessarily mean legal.
Right. Yeah, I had Krista McIntyre. They have an organization here in the state of Texas. And they basically, if there are parents that are being investigated for CPS, by CPS, they kind of come alongside them and help them know what their rights are. And then also remind CPS of what their duty is.
Excellent.
And what their rules are. So that's why I saw that you were talking about CPS, and I'm like, well, we gotta talk about that as well. Folks definitely need to be aware of what their rights are, and don't assume because it's legal, it is necessarily okay with CPS or the doctors at the hospitals, because we're seeing more and more with doctors doing these reports and stuff to CPS.
Absolutely. We're actually in a situation in Colorado where the hospital system is very anti-cannabis, if you will. And so they have started to fluff studies or fluff numbers. So if you come in there and you have nausea for any reason, it doesn't matter, and you've used cannabis at all in the last 30 days, they're just going to diagnose it as cannabis hyperemesis
or really
as cannabis abuser. And so now you're seeing all of these things going, oh, the shocking illness is now on the rise. And that's not actually the case. The hospital is actually not treating things like, we had one patient go in for an open and infected surgical wound who takes 10 milligrams of THC a night, diagnosed with cannabis hyperemesis, not given any antibiotics.
Are you kidding me?
No, I would love to say that I'm kidding you. We've had kids leave the state where they can't take their cannabis with them. Uh-huh. And we had a Crohn's patient leave the state to go home to visit his family in Illinois before they had a medical program. And he came back and he was in a full Crohn's flare. They went to the hospital and they diagnosed him with cannabis hyperemesis syndrome.
Oh, wow. So that's really going to skew the statistics.
Yes.
I had no idea they were doing that. I mean, you know, you think of people in the medical profession as being neutral observers and reporters.
They are not.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been a very interesting situation. And the other caveat to that is they're now testing basically every birth that comes through. They're testing blood in the umbilical cord, and they don't require consent to do it. So they're testing to see if the rates of babies or moms testing positive for THC are on the rise. But hemp CBD is legal for adult use, you know, as is cannabis. So it's still a very sticky and iffy kind of thing. And people don't realize that they're testing without consent, so they don't have to tell you. And then all of a sudden they get a visit from the social worker after they've had a baby. So
yeah. And I think that's kind of a nationwide thing, because I think they do the same thing here in Texas where they'll test and not, like you said, there's no consent. I mean, I think what they're going to do by doing this sort of thing is they're going to drive people to not go to the hospital or go to the doctor when they're really sick.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then you also have to look at it. You know, if a woman's doctor has said, go ahead and use CBD or go ahead and use this in lieu of something like Zofran that is known to cause birth defects, you know, you have to weigh the risks and the benefits for that. Because if a chronically ill pregnant mother has a choice between, say, prednisone, Enbrel, or CBD, I know most of them are going to choose CBD based on the safety profile.
Absolutely. I want to go back to your story for just a sec. And
sure.
I want you to kind of walk folks through what a day was like for you on your pharmaceutical medications versus now, when you're pretty much all your medicine is plant-based, it sounds like.
Correct. Okay. So just to give you a snapshot in my life. I would sleep maybe every 3 days for a couple hours. So after lying in bed all night because I couldn't sleep, and that's with Ambien.
Wow.
Yeah, that's while taking Ambien, and Ambien, sometimes you don't know what you're doing. So who knows, I could have gotten up and made some cookies that night and had no idea.
She went shopping on Amazon.
Right. You know, it's a very scary thing when your kids come up and say, oh, thank you for those cookies you made last night. And you're like, what?
What?
So then I would wake up or, you know, kind of get myself up. I would take, you know, my handful of medication and I would go to work, and I was on, let's see, prednisone, lisinopril, Coreg, Areva, which is a very strong DMARD, oxycodone, Opana, Zofran, gabapentin, and Ambien. So those were the medications I was on. So, you know, you get up in the morning, you're loopy from the Ambien, and then you're popping Opana, oxycodone, you know, your Areva, and your blood pressure medications to just so that you can get going. You know, you go into work and hope that you're not reacting to that combination of medication. There was one time I went to work, and I worked in severe, profound special ed, and I had such a bad reaction. I was falling asleep and nodding off while I was there.
Oh, that is not good.
Not good at all.
It's not. It's not good in a classroom full of, you know, regular kids.
Yeah, yeah, or any children. You know,
exactly.
It's a very scary thing. And so I'd have to go home that day if I had a reaction to it. You know, plus being on gabapentin with all of that, you're not right in the head. They talk about people being scared about the high from THC, but I guarantee you, if you were to take the combination of medication that I was, you would be so off your gourd, you wouldn't know what to do with yourself.
Well, I was kind of surprised when you mentioned that you were driving. I'm like, after taking all that?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know? So it's... It was just a normal day. So you'd go to work. You know, if you didn't react, you'd work through the day. You'd come home. You'd take more of all of that so that you could have the energy to cook dinner. You'd still be exhausted and you would just, you know, lay down in bed yet not be able to sleep. So you'd take, you know, Ambien and your gabapentin and hope that you got some sleep. And, you know, rarely did that happen. And you just lather, rinse, and repeat. It was horrible. And it didn't take away my pain. My labs were still all over the place. My disease was incredibly active to the point where I was, you know, losing joints and knuckles and bones. Rheumatoid arthritis dissolves bone and tissue. And so I'm missing a whole bunch of my bones, and I would have to have joint replacements and surgeries and all of these other crazy things. So I get to Colorado, and my only inclination is to get off the oxycodone and Opana because they're difficult to find. And so I do that. I take from February to May, and I wean off my last prescription of Opana and down to the oxycodone. And then May 16th is my first opiate-free day, which is amazing.
And how many years?
At least five.
Wow.
At least five. So it was amazing. And then all of a sudden my stomach started working again. It was like, oh, hey, we're not taking those opiates anymore. This is great.
Yeah. Because that's a big thing with the Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. Mm-hmm. Doesn't that cause gastroparesis?
Oh, it absolutely can. So it's really bad when you have all of these medications and the side effects are stomach issues like gastroparesis.
Right. So, as if you weren't having enough problems with that already.
Right. So, you know, another year goes by and I'm still using cannabis. I'm still on, you know, some of the pharmaceuticals, but I need them less and less and less. And I'm starting to notice that all of a sudden I can walk further. I'm recovering better. I have more energy. And next thing you know, I'm off all my medication, except for the biologic and the cannabis. And I'm back at work. I'm functioning. I'm not hungover from all the pills at night and taking lots of pills during the day that still don't make me feel good. I am clear. Now I'm able to go and talk to elected officials, no problem, without being high on Ambien or high on Coreg and Areva and oxycodone. You know, so my job has actually taken off quite a bit. And now I put out education. I have classes that we do. You know, we help consult with folks who are looking at medical legalization so that they know what to expect from a patient's point of view. And it's been amazing, the stuff that I'm able to do. I'm no longer a burden to society, and I'm actually functional, and I'm living life, which is just, it's such an amazing thing.
That's awesome. Now you mentioned kids and cookies. So were you, so you had kids at home while you were on all these prescription medications? It sounds like. How old were they?
At the time they were, you know, I mean, I've always been on these medications. I had juvenile rheumatoid and all of that. So my kids have never known me in a place where I've never not been on these medications. So, you know, the weird thing is, you know, here I am on all these medications, you know, not even batting an eye at it. But then when I go to use cannabis, I'm like, oh, I have teenage kids. Are they going to think I'm doing drugs? You know?
Well, but, I mean, that's certainly what was drummed into our head in school.
Yeah, you always have this thing in the back of your head, like, you know, am I doing something really wrong? Uh-huh. You know, is this bad? And then the kids actually see you get better, and they learn the truth, and we get over that one real quick.
Now, I've seen articles, you know, because that's another argument against legalizing medical cannabis, is that use among juveniles will increase. But I think I've seen some articles, and I don't know if you've seen these as well, where cannabis use among younger kids, teenagers, I guess, has actually decreased in states where it's legalized.
Yes. Yep. They've either held or they've decreased. There has not been an increase in youth use. Not at all.
Yeah. I guess it's not cool when your mom's doing it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like, oh crap, my parents are doing this. I guess I'm just going to go slam energy drinks or something, you know?
I'll do something else, because that's just, you know, that's like the Facebook of drugs, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not cool anymore.
Well, it's been really good. And plus, we're not, you know, even the neighborhood markets don't sell to youth, because it's your neighbor. It's not a criminal enterprise that you're working with. So it's
exactly,
you know, nobody's selling to the youth anymore. And then you've got all your parents are doing cannabis, and the kids are like, oh, I just don't want to.
Yeah, it's not as much fun when your folks are doing it. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's not as much fun if your mom can outsmoke you.
Well, Bridget, if folks want to, we've already got the address for Keep It Legal. And if folks want to follow you, are you on any social media? I know you're on Facebook, but I don't know if you are out there on, you know, Twitter or Instagram or any of those things.
I have a Twitter and I have a LinkedIn, but I always forget that I have them. I'm not the most social media inclined person that there is. I do have autism as well. So, you know, I tend to hyper focus on just Facebook, and that's going to be the best place to get in touch with me or follow me. And then there is the website. We have that, and we have a way for you to send us an email if you need to as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Very good. Well, you guys go check out keepitlegalcolorado.org and give Bridget a follow on Facebook, but not on LinkedIn and Twitter, because you won't find her there very often.
Truth.
Well, thanks a bunch for your time. I appreciate you coming on and sharing your story. And I just think it's funny, because most of the time when you think of a patient being in Colorado, you're like, well, they moved there for the medicine. So
yeah, but no, I moved for the weather.
Yeah, well, it's got to beat the heck out of Georgia.
Oh, yeah. We used to say that we had four seasons. It was tornado season, yellow season, where all the pollen from the pine trees would drop in the 2 weeks. Then you would have Satan's basement, which is most of the year. And then you would have hurricane season.
Yeah. My daddy always said here in East Texas, we have a cool season between summers.
Right.
So, yeah, and I guess we need to throw the pine pollen in there as well. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, the prettiest time of year, and you can't even open a window, because otherwise your entire house would be covered in yellow.
Yeah, the 2 weeks, it's actually nice enough to open your windows. You just can't.
Yep. Well, thanks a lot, Bridget.
All right, you take care.
All right, you too. Bye-bye. Show notes for today's episode can be found out at cannabishealsme.com/106. We will be back on Thursday with another educational episode. In today's episode, Bridget mentioned that a lot of people do not want to enroll in the state's medical cannabis program because it impacts their ability to bear arms on a federal level. So I invited Suzanne Sherman on to talk about that subject, and she will be joining me on Thursday's episode. So tune in on Thursday, and until then, you guys be safe and try to stay out of trouble. Thanks a lot for listening. Hit the subscribe button and you'll never miss an episode of the Cannabis Heals Me podcast. If you enjoyed today's show, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or whatever podcast app you're using. Do you have a suggestion for a guest on Cannabis Heals Me? Send an email to podcast@cannabishealsme.com. We'd love to hear from you. Please do not take any information from Cannabis Heals Me or its guests as medical advice. Contact your licensed physician before taking cannabis or using it for medical treatments.